As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Joelle Steiniger.
And I'm Michael Sacca. Today we talked to the VP of Design at BuzzFeed, Cap Watkins. Joelle, what did you think?
I like this one a lot. It's a huge team with a lot of different design departments and designing for a lot of different problems from the editorial side to product. So it was really interesting to hear how he's starting to have the teams work together without losing any of their independence and some of the ways that they work on communicating with each other. What were your thoughts on it, Michael?
Yeah, so I loved kind of the way he talks about communicating with his design team is totally applicable to anyone who is working on a project that has designers. So he gives some really good tips about how to start fostering that communication and feedback loop that has really worked well for him. So let's get into it.
We'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors. Hover makes purchasing and managing your domain simple and easy. This week, I talked to Max of Y Decision about why he uses Hover.
I was using Enom and GoDaddy for domain registrars, and I was looking for something different. I came across Hover then. What I really liked about Hover was it was easy to use. I had a clean interface. I'm a designer by heart, so I like things like that.
Go to hover.com and use the code SATISFIEDCUSTOMERS to get 10% off your domain purchase today. HostGator is the easiest way to get your business up and running fast. This week, I talked to their marketing coordinator, Kyler, about his favorite part of working at HostGator.
See, my favorite part is when I get to go to trade shows and get to meet people who know who we are. People will give me hugs. People talk about how much they love us. And that's my favorite part. It's getting to see that kind of stuff.
Go to HostGator/promo/rocketship to get 30% off today.
You've heard me rave about CodeShip before. It's because they're an incredible team building an amazing product that makes my days happier and my code more reliable. Recently, they shipped an incredible new feature. It's called Parallel CI, and it allows for faster testing than ever before. Early access customers like Product Hunt have improved their development speed tremendously. If you haven't yet, tell your dev team to start a free trial. They have a super generous free plan, and they also offer 20% off 3 months to all Rocketship listeners. Sign up at codeship.com/Rocketship.
So you're the VP of design at BuzzFeed now. This is a relatively new position. Tell us a bit about what your kind of role is there at BuzzFeed now.
So we're still figuring it out.
Okay.
it's a little vague on purpose, I think. BuzzFeed's pretty big, so we're about 800 people now. Oh, wait, 900 people now? It's pretty large. And so design means a lot of different things here, right? So like there's a product design team, which works on the tech side, that works on like obviously the website, the apps, all that good stuff. And then, but then there's like an entire editorial team, which has design inside of it, right? So like art directors, photo editors, photographers, that sort of thing. Then we have like a marketing team that is design, like designers on the marketing team. And then we have a creative team that works with brands to like create content, which also has like three or four designers working on stuff over there. And so like what's interesting is the only group that is, you know, I'm directly like managing right now is the product design team. But I'm actually in a lot of conversations now across the entire org. So I've been kind of consulting with the editorial team to kind of help them figure out how to scale design and like what kind of roles they might need and helping them like define those roles, going to interview those folks and stuff like that. So even if they like aren't reporting to me directly, which I don't really care about that much, like trying to just make sure that we're all thinking in the same way about this stuff and staying connected is going to be really important. I think that's what like the role is meant to be. So yeah, so that's kind of what I'm up to these days. Not very much, just a little bit, little something.
So tell us a little bit more about that. I mean, how do you keep all those different teams kind of on the same page with the same brand message, at least the same kind of feel, and still kind of allow that creative genesis to happen within each design team?
Yeah, that's going to be the challenge, I think. So right now there's not a lot of overlap between even those teams just talking. So I'm starting out with pretty small things just to get people to even like see each other regularly is going to be important. So we started a thing on Friday afternoons, actually like ripped this right off of Etsy where I worked last. We have a Friday like design club where all of the designers from the entire company are invited to come to this thing. And like we have guest speakers, or the designers themselves will talk about themselves like in their life a little bit. And it's just kind of a nice time for everybody to see each other. And the first time we did it, like so many people were like, I've never seen half of these people before. I didn't even know they worked here. Right. So, that's only going to get worse. Like it's getting bigger, like really fast. So, so the more of those things we can do right now, you know, there are other teams here. There are really cool people doing really cool work. And at least we should just be sharing and talking about it. So that'll be the first like small thing we do. And then I'm still trying to work out like how to keep the like connective tissue between everything. Now, as far as like keeping things consistent, but also letting people experiment, like, that's, experimentation with content types and design is like a big part of BuzzFeed's culture. I mean, a lot of the formats we have today, like were because editors experimented with and like kind of broke the CMS that we built a little bit. They're constantly like pushing the boundaries of what our CMS can do. And like, I'll give you a good example. So like we have a long form content type, which is, you know, it's long form reporting, right? So it's really beautiful. You can get big images. It's set in a different typeface. It's pretty nice. There was a photo editor who like wanted to do a long form like photo essay and used the long form like CMS format to build this photo essay, but it's not built for that, right? It's not designed for that. And that was clear when it posted and we were like, oh, whoa, like that's really interesting. We should design something so that works really well. And so that's what we're working on now. That's one of the like many, many things that we've worked on recently.
So it's like editorially driven design.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the time, I mean, it's really interesting. BuzzFeed is so much about the content, right? It's so much about the photos or like the reporting or the hilariousness of the quiz or the list, right? Without that, like the design doesn't matter so much at all. And so I think we design less for like, you know, for design's sake or for like, you know, typical product design, like it's not so much about the flow a lot of the times, it's about like just making sure the content's presented well and like and is free of distraction as much as possible.
How has that changed for you coming from Etsy, a kind of a marketplace, and then approaching editorial?
Yeah, it's way different.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah, Etsy, it's funny, like there's a lot of knobs you can turn at Etsy, like tons and tons of knobs you can turn to get different results. And like at Etsy, like metrics you might look at would be anything from like, you know, add to cart rates to conversion rates to favoriting rates, all these different things would kind of add up and might like, it might be wins for the company. Like mm-hmm. at BuzzFeed, I'm sure there's still a lot of like knobs we can turn and stuff, but the, again, like the work that we're doing is very, very different. Like the flow of things outside of the CMS, like on the article formatting side, it's not really a flow so much as it is like, let's push things out of the way and like make a great reading experience or like a great interactive experience. And that's kind of it. Like someone may hit that, share it, and then bail. I think like our publisher Dao Nguyen, who is the, she's kind of like running everything. she said something along the lines of like, you know, if I had two users and one of them came to BuzzFeed and read 10 articles and they flowed through all these articles and they left BuzzFeed. And then we had another user who visited one article and shared it on Twitter or Facebook. Like I actually prefer that person. Right. So that's like the kind of metric we look at is like sharing is kind of like the core metric. And there's not a lot you can do to like boost that except for like make good content and make it easy to share. And that's it.
So what kind of collaboration happens between like the content creators and the design team?
Yeah. So on the product design side, we're trying to find more ways to be even more in touch with the editorial team, but we have a few email lists that like features at BuzzFeed.com or whatever that like is an internal email list that like the editors all use to like send requests or bug reports through to the product side. We're constantly watching like what people are posting, constantly like talking to the editors, like having them like use the CMS, watching them use the CMS. And I think like, you know, one of my goals, it's so funny, like the editorial team all used to be in this building that the rest of the company's in, but we outgrew this building. So now they're across the street and everybody's super bummed out because they used to go talk to them a lot more. And so at the end of the year, we're moving and we're going to be in a bigger building where we can all be again together. And like, I think like people just seem to walk around and talk to each other a lot, which is nice. But I think like there's just, it's so funny. It's nice to have all of your users in the same place as you. You know what I mean? It's like they're all in the building. And so you could like user testing isn't like, let's go find somebody on the street and bring them in. It's like, no, like they're right down the hall. Let's like go talk to them and show them this thing we're working on. And that's pretty magical. So I think there's going to be a lot more of that going forward. It's just like right now it's kind of a pain because of the like geography of it. But I think once we move back in together, it'll be like even, well, we'll do it a lot more.
This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com.
You do obviously a lot of collaboration with the design team, and I'd love to kind of see how you approach feedback and iteration inside of your team. And maybe even if you have some kind of managerial tips for talking and giving feedback on design comps and ideas.
Yeah, totally. You just tell them what to do, right? That's the
just say make it blue.
That's how
make
it works. Pop. Right? Yeah, that's make it pop. That's right. Oh my God.
What are some of the things that you maybe avoid? Yeah. Or what are some of the kind of phrases that you use that tend to ease that conversation?
Sure. So the way it works here is actually pretty, I brought a lot of stuff over with me from Etsy that we were doing there. And so what we have, kind of the cadence we're in, is we have one design critique on Tuesday afternoons every week. And it's about an hour and a half, three designers. It's on a rotation. So three designers go each week, and like, they have half an hour each to kind of deep dive on their work and get feedback. And like, what we ask the designers to do is like, come in, not just present the work, but come in with questions about their own work. So what are things you're worried about? Where are you stuck? Like, what doesn't feel right to you and you don't know why? Because then it's a little more focused. Cause like, anybody can like show some working, like, and then a whole group can shotgun feedback, right? You see that all the time. I'm very good at that. Like, I'm ready. Like, let's just, I'll tell you everything that I think is wrong. But what I'd much prefer is like a designer, like, to walk out of a critique with actionable things that matter to them, right? So like, we've all been there where we've shown work, everybody's given you so much feedback except for about the one thing that you really needed help with. And it's such a bummer to walk out of there like that. So when they come with that, that's really helpful. The other thing we're using is Basecamp for all design work. So it's not, we're like, you can use it for project management, but we're not really doing it that way. We're using it just to post, like, to basically like document the entire design process from start to finish. So what you get is, you know, a project to kick off, the designer will write down the problems they're trying to solve, the like strengths of the current product, if it exists, that we don't want to lose, and then the kind of design goals and product goals around the project. And that's all they'll do. That'll be like the very first post. It'll happen like same day as the kickoff meeting. And that's like a great way to make sure that you're aligned with the product person and the engineers on your team. Because we've all had those meetings where you walk in and you're like, okay, I think we all get it. And then you realize, you know, 3 weeks later, no one got it. And you're all, you all thought completely different things. And now you've wasted 3 weeks and everybody's upset.
Is that kind of a natural process you find for designers to come in with those questions? Or does it take a little bit of coaching?
To come in with...
kind of like their worries and fears. Because a lot of times you make a design, you're like, it's good. Like, and then you get like the pushback when you start getting feedback. How do you avoid that?
Yeah, I think making it kind of compulsory is a good way to force people into it. It like, I think when people, the designers that do come in and think that, oh, this is just great the way it is, like, it's just because they haven't stopped to really like think critically about it. I don't think I've ever had a design that I've been like, yeah, totally, 100%, like nailed it. Like never, even after we ship it, right? It's never... Never will.
That's when you see all the holes.
Right. Yeah. That's actually the worst moment because you hit the button and you're like, oh my God, wait. And it's already out in the world. But yeah, I think the compulsory part is like, you have no choice. Like, you're coming with three questions or concerns no matter what. And so, you know, it forces you to look at it super critically. And I don't know. I haven't really had a problem with anybody coming in and just being like, oh, I couldn't think of anything. It's all great. Like, I haven't had that happen yet. But if that were to happen, my response would be, okay, well, like, let's look at it and like together, you mean just the two of us, and like, I can help you start to pick this thing apart a little bit.
So how do you approach the problems where, like, you know, maybe a suggestion has come up, but it hasn't been addressed in the design after a couple iterations? Is there a point when you'd step in and say, hey, we really got to look at this piece?
Yeah. The nice thing about Basecamp is it's supposed to be kind of ongoing. Like, there's no schedule to it. It's just to be happening all the time. So the other nice thing is, like, once, if you're in a critique or if like I talk with someone one-on-one about their work or whatever, one of us will document it in that thread for that product. And it's kind of interesting to see, like, oh, it's documented here, which makes them way more likely to be responded to. And it gives more accountability to people, right? Because it'd be really easy to be like, oh, I forgot we even talked about that or whatever. But like, if you have to quickly like throw down bullet points in public of like the things that you just talked about with me or with like the design team, like, it makes you more accountable for addressing those things. Even if the answer is like, I tried a few things and I can't figure out anything better, so like, we're going to roll forward with this. Like, that's okay. But yeah, I mean, I just find documentation such an interesting thing. Like, public documentation of a process means that you're way more accountable for that process.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. And I never thought to use Basecamp in that way beyond just like the, hey, here's a comp and here's all our feedback on it. And then I fixed all your issues, kind of thing,
right?
Which is a terrible process, right. But So how do you bridge the gap between the design and the engineering when it comes in? How involved is the engineering in the design process, and how do you kind of bridge that handoff?
Currently, we're still working on that relationship a little bit. I think the engineers and designers all like each other a bunch. We recently kind of, I'm going to say reorganized, but we actually like kind of organized the teams into more like permanent teams. So before, we're just kind of just like bouncing around between things. You know, it's like startup stuff, right? You're bouncing between a lot of projects. You're like not really dedicated to anything. And the engineers too, we're like kind of bouncing around. Sure. So now that we have them like kind of together, right, we're like, okay, like these three engineers, this designer, this product person are all going to like concentrate on this area or this feature. That gives us a lot more opportunity to bring them in early into the design process, right? So like that Basecamp thread I was talking about, from the very beginning, like all of the engineers for that product are on that thread with the designers.
Okay.
And so they can start to like, the hope is that we can kind of drag them into the design process and be like, hey, like give us your feedback. Tell us what you're thinking, like tell us what you think won't work. Like I've met very few engineers who don't really care about the product they're working on and don't have a lot of opinions about where we should be going or what we should be thinking about. And the other nice thing is like engineers have such a different set of like cares and concerns about like the stuff mm-hmm. we work on. And it's just so important to make sure we're taking that into account as early as possible, right? I mean, how many times has a designer like gotten through a process and like handed it off just to be told like, oh, this is actually incredibly difficult. And we can't do that in the time allotted, right?
Yes.
And that's a huge bummer. And it's a bummer for everybody, right? The engineers don't like saying no because it seems cool. And the designer doesn't like that they waste all this time working on something that's not like doable. And so the earlier we can just bring people in and get them looking at it and get them thinking about it, the earlier we can find those things. And when we do start implementation, or not the end, like in the middle, when we start doing the implementation, like everybody being totally bought in because they had an opportunity to like influence the direction of the product is going to be really helpful. It makes like change way easier. It makes building it way easier. So that's like, I think that's where we're headed. And also the other thing is so at Etsy, all the designers were also front end. Like they all wrote front end. So okay. HTML, CSS,
oh,
some of them got even deeper. Like some of them were like writing JavaScript and even some PHP, which was nice. Pretty nuts. But, and here we're starting to move towards that as well. We started a thing called Design Tweaks, where once a week, a couple designers and a front end engineer get together and they kind of work through design bugs on the site and deploy and like basically push them into the code base. So the designers are getting like the designers who haven't coded before, haven't had that opportunity, have like a kind of safe place with like an engineer to work with, where they can learn front end and also be making like impactful changes like on the website, which is pretty neat.
I know that's kind of an age-old
debate. Like we're going to start bringing those things closer together.
Yeah, I know that's kind of an age-old debate with designers and do they need to learn how to code? But I feel like when at least the HTML and CSS can be implemented by a designer, it kind of solves that like your pixels are off or it's different from my design and really lets the designer craft it in the medium that it's going to be, you know, represented in and absorbed in by the audience.
Yeah, it is an age-old debate.
Yes.
There are many, many thought pieces by thought leaders on the topic. I don't know.
Have
it's
you
really
written
fun.
One?
I wrote one at some point, yeah.
You
it
did?
Was actually,
okay.
It was the reverse.
I thought I remember it.
It was the reverse, actually, because whenever I talk about designers coding, I always get some question, some snarky question from a designer that's like, well, why don't engineers learn to design? And I'm like, actually, that's the point. Like, that's a really good idea, right? Like, that's why we try to bring them in. And it's so funny. I mean, my personal like opinion is that like we're asking engineers to come into the design process, right? We're trying to get them involved super early to think about things the way we think about things. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem particularly equitable for us to like demand that sort of involvement and then be unwilling to go the other way either. You know what I mean? It feels like a very strange like imbalance to be like, no, you should be part of my process, but I'm going to like shield myself from yours. Feels strange.
Yes.
And then the other thing is I just noticed, and this is like, I don't know, this is more of a blanket statement that means it's completely wrong. But what I've noticed about like generalists, the people that can like, that tackle UX stuff and like think about that a lot, and then also like pretty strong visual designers and also work on the front end of things, is like, those are people who adapt really well. And so when you see things like, now like mobile prototyping is becoming a huge deal. Like the people that are diving into Origami or Quartz Composer and all these tools, like those are the people that like, those are the same people. Those are like the generalists that just can't take it. That like they can't, you know, they want to own the whole thing. Right. Like they just can't take it anymore. And so they learned this other piece of design, or they learned this new technology or whatever. And like, that's going to be super valuable to any organization as it grows, because like this landscape changes so quickly that for someone to be like stuck in their tool or stuck in their silo of design, like doesn't like, I don't think that's very scalable.
I agree. Yeah. And I feel like HTML, CSS at the very least is becoming more of a design tool than a development tool.
Oh yeah.
In the sense that that's how designers communicate their work online. And if you stay in Photoshop, I don't know if you fully, it's like drawing when you need to be painting almost. And so your work isn't fully represented.
Right. No, I mean, like Framer.js is so interesting. Like I really dig on Framer.js. We've been using it a little bit here, and it's like, man, like Quartz Composer is pretty crazy. Like that's all, like that's the learning curve is very steep. It can do a lot, but the learning curve is extremely steep. But like Framer is just like, I mean, HTML and CSS is pretty simple. Like, I mean, just like relatively, it's pretty simple to pick up. And then JavaScript is like, or CoffeeScript in this case, is like not that far away.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just, it's so powerful to be able to build the thing. And then also again, like it starts to like, I don't know, like whenever I push code with engineers, like I like that relationship becomes tighter, which makes the product better. Right.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So yeah, I don't know. I love engineers. They're my favorites.
Yeah. They make the world happen.
That's true.
I'd love to hear kind of on the same vein, but when you're looking to hire designers, is there anything in particular that you do when trying to see if they're a good match for your team and kind of get an idea of their skill set and style?
Yeah. So when I talk to designers, there's usually two phone screens before we bring someone in for an interview loop. And the first one is usually just me talking to someone about like just BuzzFeed, making sure that that what we're working on seems exciting to them, kind of talking to them about what they're working on, what their process looks like. Those are all pretty like, I mean, what your process looks like is pretty revealing. I mean, it'll tell you a lot about like what someone does, what someone doesn't do. And then the second interview is like more of a deep dive on work. And that's where it starts to get like pretty interesting, because we ask to like see, the second interview is like, hey, like Google Hangouts with us, or come in and show us like, show one person like two or three projects you've worked on, right? Okay. And what we ask for is not like, I don't really care about the finished product. Like I want to see the really messy part. Like I want to see like the stuff that you tried that didn't work. I want to see the sketches that you threw away, or the thing you deployed that like totally tanked and you had to pull it back. Like show me all of these things, right? Or show me something and show me stuff and tell me what you shipped and why you're not happy with it too. Like, what are the things that you wish were different? Because there's always that. And it's funny, a lot of folks like show just like, here's the polished like sketch file at the end. And like, that's all they show is like, here's this polished work. And there's no errors. There's no second iteration. It's just like, just that one thing, that one artifact. And it's just, I'm like, did you only do this one thing? how do you know? Because if you only did one thing, you're definitely wrong. Like that's like I've done 12 things and still been wrong. So I'm pretty sure this isn't it.
So you're looking for like the thought process behind the design rather than the finished product when you're going into interview.
Yeah, and I want like it's even like just, I mean, it's thoughtfulness. You know, it's like even. I mean, I definitely get, like, I worked at startups where you're going really fast and like maybe you only got through one or two passes of something and you had to ship it, right? But being able to talk about that and talk about why that, like, you know, again, like we only, you know, contextualizing it basically and being like, yeah, so we had 3 weeks, we did this really fast, had to ship it, like, and kind of here's what we did, here's what we learned, here's what we would change if we were going to do a second version because of what we learned. Like, and it's just like all these little like thoughtful things that even when you're moving really fast should still be in your head.
What's kind of next for you in BuzzFeed?
You know, not a lot. Just, you know, just you know, full things. Internet takeover, I think is the plan.
What are the top 10 things that you and BuzzFeed are working on?
Well, so you have to make it an odd, weird number so people will click. You know, it's like a 17 things is up next for BuzzFeed.
Okay, what are the 3.5 things that you're focused on with BuzzFeed?
That's actually pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good. No, I think so growing the design team is a big deal. So like the product design team right now is at something like 12 people. And by the end of the year, it'll probably be close to double that. If we can manage that. So that's going to hiring and recruiting like awesome product designers is going to be like a big deal for me in the next year. Kind of growing these teams that I talked about, the kind of more focused teams, and making them feel like supported and like they have a lot of clarity. So they can like just execute against this stuff is a big deal. So we've written a little bit about how, so we're getting, I don't know if you've heard, we're getting really serious about the news. We interviewed Barack Obama recently, which is a big deal. I've heard he's pretty cool.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, he's semi well known on the internet.
Yeah, he's no Ed right, Williams, but he's right. Close.
He wasn't the dress or anything. But what color did you guys think the dress was? You know what I'm talking about?
I saw white and yellow.
Yeah. Yeah, that caused a big ruckus in the BuzzFeed office. People were like, I thought people were going to like lose their minds. Everybody was really upset about it. It was just everybody yellow and gold or gold and white, and other people are like blue and black. It was this really like hardcore. No, so like we're getting serious about the news and stuff, and like we're working on a news app, which is very different than most news apps that I've seen anyway, which will be pretty cool. Yeah, cool. And so we're working on a lot of stuff like this. We actually just launched a new game called Cute or Not, which is basically Tinder for your pets. So you can swipe between, you upload your pet and you can see how cute people think it is. And that's actually doing pretty well. And we're going to build a lot more like little cool games like that probably in the future, I would assume. But we're always like, it's all experimental, right? Like we're just experimenting. So if you're like super into that and you're a designer or engineer or something, like you should definitely reach out because we're going to be building a lot of cool stuff this year.
Awesome. And where do we keep up with you online?
So I'm just Cap on Twitter. And then I have a blog on the interwebs. It's just blog.capwatkins.com where I post stuff sometimes. And that's kind of it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Looking for more entrepreneurial content? Check out this week's Zen Founder, where Rob and Sherry talk about raising entrepreneurial kids.
The book is only $5 for a PDF or $10 for paperback and PDF. That pretty much wraps it up. Goodbye.
That was our 8-year-old. Pitching his book that he wrote, A Parent's Guide to Minecraft. And he wrote it in a Google Doc, and I helped him edit it and clean it up. And then he did a small print run. He asked us to invest in him to fund the physical copies of the book and ordered 25 copies. He's also selling via PDF. And so he and I put together a little website, and he's done well for himself. He's saving up some money for a big Lego set, and he's already paid back his investors. So I've been pretty impressed with his project. And, you know, he has a little profit and loss Google spreadsheet that he and I keep up. And I give him payouts as new money comes in for sales.
Go to zenfounder.com or search Zen Founder in iTunes today.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast. If you enjoyed it, we have tons of other awesome episodes on our website. Check them out, rocketship.fm.
And make sure to check out our app discount section, where we feature discounts from amazing companies like Treehouse, Wistia, Woo Themes, all giving you exclusive discounts for being a Rocket Ship listener. So go to rocketship.fm/essentials.